All right, here we go. So in Parshat Va'era, I feel bad because we are basically sticking to the beginning of Va'era, and a lot of things happen in Va'era, like the majority of the plagues occur in Va'era, and we haven't even gotten there yet. We haven't even gotten to Moshe going up.
You haven't brought them up yet.
Yeah, so I mean, but we've seen so many interesting things from Shadal so far. So I'm going to actually use the English, and I guess because I'm home and over Zoom, I can do some liberties when it comes to this. Also, in order to be able to get through a lot more, maybe in this particular session, than we normally would, so that we can do a lot of the interesting ones in the beginning, get those out of the way, and then maybe move on to other parts of the story so we can get more of Shadal. Okay, all right, so the first question I have for you guys is, and this is something that I had wondered for a long time until I saw it in Shadal. I didn't see that the Mefarshim generally ask it, at least in your Mikro Gedola, you won't generally find the Mefarshim wondering about this, and it's so clear, it's so, like, such an upfront question when you're reading the text. It says like this. God tells Moshe, go to Bnei Israel, tell them the whole story about how I'm going to take you guys out and, you know, bring you back to the land of Israel and the covenant of the forefathers. Moshe goes to them, and they don't listen, okay? And that's what we talked about yesterday. Then it says that God says to Moshe, this is in Perek Vav, Pasuk Yud, and Yud Aleph, go to Paro now. So I'm going to tell you, okay, fine, they're not listening. Go to Paro and tell him, let my people go. All right, and Moshe says, again, you know, after having already argued with God previously, and all that whole story had already happened, he says, you know, I am an Aral Sefatayim, I have uncircumcised lips, or whatever that means, right? Shadal understands it as not, like, impeded or blocked up lips. Aral, he says, or the word Orla, is in reference to something that's useless or covering over something to prevent it from functioning. So we know that when it comes to Brit Mila, it takes away the Orla. And also, we know circumcising the heart because there's a blockage on the heart that is preventing, you know, the worship of God, let's say. Something like that. Anyway, so right after that, so God says, okay. God spoke to Moshe and Aaron and he told them about the Bnei Israel, and about Paro, and he's about to say this big, long speech. That was in Vav Yud Gimel, 6:13, right? And then 6:14, it launches into the genealogies of Bnei Israel. It starts with Reuven, and goes on to Shimon, and then Levi, and pretty much sticks with Levi, right? And it's apparent that the reason why he's telling us this is because of Levi and telling us where Moshe and Aaron come from, but it comes out of nowhere. What is it doing here of all places? It could have been in last week's Parsha when we have Amram and Yocheved having a child in the first place. You could put the genealogy there. Lots of other places. All of a sudden, God's about to make a big speech. You know, you could just like imagine God taking his breath, you know, to launch into a big speech about what he's going to do with Paro. Obviously, I'm talking anthropomorphically. And then all of a sudden, we get this lineage. So what's the point? So Shadal says like this.
Well, it could just be to motivate Moshe and Aaron. You know, they're very skeptical. They're worried about what they're about to do. And so God is emphasizing the fact that they are, you know, they're brothers.
Interesting.
Well, not that they're brothers with each other, but that Bnei Israel, the ones that they're freeing, are their brothers.
Ah, interesting. So it would work if it was written as if God was saying this to Moshe and Aaron. But it doesn't read that way. It says, right, God spoke to Moshe and Aaron and he told them about the mission of bringing the Bnei Israel out of Egypt. These are the heads of their lineages. These are the heads of Rashi Toldotem, or something like that. The sons of Reuven, the Bechor Yisrael, was Hanoch and Palu, Hezron and Carmi, right? Meaning it goes into the whole lineage as like a break from what God was speaking. So it's really weird. And if you're right, that it's like the...
That they're one of the guys. You know?
To who? Who is reading this?
And,
who's hearing this genealogy? Presumably not B'nai Yisrael at the time of the Exodus. Who's reading it is the first, you know, is us reading the Torah. When only once the Torah is given, is this going to be in there? It's not a history, detail.
I'm not saying this out loud too much in our...
It does not read that way. It would be very innovative to read it as God started to told them their lineage. It would be a very, I think, a difficult read, but if that's the way you want to read it, he's thinking you can fit it in, I'd be eager to hear it. Especially because afterwards it says, then it has God saying to Moshe, like it repeats, and God spoke to Moshe, blank. So if God was speaking the whole time, there would be no point for that, which is also part of Shaddal's point. Meaning, Shaddal says, first of all, why is this here? The answer is, it is known that the people of the East are quite particular about genealogies. Therefore, now that it is mentioned that Moshe and Aaron were appointed and raised to greatness, their genealogy is given. Meaning, once we make Moshe and Aaron the leader of the Jewish people, so because people care about once you appoint somebody in such a lofty category, where they come from, where are their lineages, so the Torah makes sure to tell you because God knows that you find that important. To us, we don't find that as important anymore. But, you know, every so often you'll hear somebody say, she has great yichus, you know, that kind of thing. All right. So and then the other problem is, why does it tell us about Reuben and Shimon? So Shaddal says it begins with Reuben in order to state that the tribe of Levi, too, is among the oldest sons of Jacob. Azah, the Svarno, Vadia Svarno, has a different understanding of this, and I saw that Ksava Kabbalah basically agrees with that one. We won't go into it. Okay. And so now he wants to deal with a different problem. The other problem is a biblical criticism problem. You know, Shaddal in the 1800s is dealing with biblical criticism that was just starting, but he quotes a lot of times from people who were like proto-Bible critics in the 1700s already, and in the early 1800s. So he says, for those who say that this genealogy was added on and was not written by Moshe, like it was written later and just kind of stripped into the Torah, their words are improbable. For below it says, the Lord spoke to Moses. The meaning, if that were true, then why does it later say that, oh, by the way, the conversation that we had just started where God was about to speak to Moshe, here God speaks to Moshe again. Meaning, if it were true that this is just copied and pasted into the story, then it should have said, right, that God spoke to Moshe and Aaron, copy and paste, and then it continues with what God says, right, afterwards. But it doesn't. It has like, oh, by the way, God was speaking and he said blank, which shows you that it was intentionally all part of the same saga. You'd have to imagine that the editor, if they had copied and pasted this in, was careful enough to make sure that it would make sense that afterwards, they would add in a couple of words to be like, oh, by the way, before the genealogy, God had just been speaking. Why would the editor do that? Obviously, that's not what's happening. He says, if the Torah were just extracts, just different disconnected texts, such a thing would be out of place. In fact, we know that the style of the ancients in arranging the words of their books is quite different than ours today. Meaning, we might not completely like the idea of this interruption, but it's just the way that the Torah is formulated, the genre. Okay, that was one comment of Shaddal. Let's go on to a next comment of Shaddal. Very interesting that Shaddal just dealt with, which is, what is the text doing here, which the regular Mefarshim generally just don't deal with. And the second question is, how do we respond to Bible critics? Okay, now one more thing, which is I really want to say, which is really interesting to me. Shaddal suggests that the lineage has to tell, basically tells us, through our understanding of how people are born, how many people can be born to someone in their lifetime, and a lot of other things, that it must be that this lineage, this genealogy, is not exact. Meaning to say that there's more generations in between that are not named in the Torah. He says, this is in Vav Chaf, Perek Vav Pasuk Chaf. He says, we are constrained to say that scripture omitted some of the generations between Kahat and Amram, right? According to what we see here, Kahat has Amram, gives birth to Amram. Amram gives birth to Moshe, right? And, and also Miriam, right? Okay, so what's the problem? He says, in Numbers, in Bamidbar Gimel, the number of males of the age of 1 month and up registered to the Kahatis, the Kahats, is 8,600. Okay, again, in the desert, the second generation in, right, 8,600. He had only four sons. Sorry, Kahat had four sons: Amram, Itzhar, Chevron, and Uziel. Okay. So what you have to say is each son had how many children? If the total is 8,600, he had four sons. Thus, each of one of the four sons of Kahat would have had to have 2,150 sons. Is that probable?
Or just overall descendants.
Yeah, but there's only, again, the Kahatis, there's only three generations between Kahat and the people in the desert. Right? Or four generations, maxi.
We also said that the Jews were multiplying at a very high rate.
That's true.
Especially the Levim.
Right. Even if you say that each, again, this is three generations later. So even if you say that each time they had a child, it was really they were having six children, can you really get to 2,150 for each family? Is that what you're gonna tell me? It's gonna be very difficult. Moreover, not only that, but we know how many children Amram had, right? Again, Kahat has Amram, and we are saying that he has 2,150. How many children does Amram have? He only has three. He has Aaron, Moshe, and Miriam. And Moshe, how many kids does he have? We only know of two, right? And Aaron has four. How is it possible that Amram and his brother Itzhar, Chevron, and Uziel would have 2,150 souls in the second year after their exodus from Egypt? Even if you say that they multiplied many times, there's no way that you have in your own family 800 kids. Sorry to say, right? Therefore, he agrees that there must be generations missing in this genealogy. And he says that J.B. Kupp, in his 1777 work, it looks like a German work, maybe, I don't know, or Italian work, maybe, says that Levi, Kahat, and Amram were not consecutive generations, but that there were other generations between them. Accordingly, the number 430 years that the children of Israel dwelled in Egypt can be reconciled literally, because there could actually have been 430 years. We're just not told about those years for whatever reason. And the great numerosity of the children of Israel in Egypt, Shadal says, does not have to be explained in a miraculous fashion, like Joe suggested from the Midrash, that they multiplied greatly. He says, it just never says that explicitly in the Torah. And so we don't have to take it literally. We don't have to take it miraculously. We can take it literally because there are actually 430 years and many generations in between that we just don't know about. Shemot Yud Bet Mem, it says 430 years that B'nai Yisrael have been in Egypt. All right? Fine. So he actually gives a different solution maybe for the 430 years, which is also really interesting. So first of all, taking 430 years literally is not a move that many Mefarshim do. I don't know if you call it unique to Shadal, but it is a rarity. I told you guys about Rav Chaim Hershenson. Also has a literal view of 430 years. He just places the 430, the first time that people went down to Egypt, as not referring to the sons of Yaakov, but the sons of the general nation of Israel, which includes the children of Avraham's Keturah children, who maybe dwelled near Goshen or by Goshen or something like that. So I told you about that. So he does take 430 years. Literally, he just places it back in some, and you have to, you know, play with some of the words maybe. And he, so back to Shadal for a second. We'll end off here. So he says that the scholar Jost, I guess was a historian, Jost, says that these names mentioned here are names of families. We've mentioned this also, that they could be names of clans, meaning so long as people called themselves by the clan of Amram, so that was this many years, yeah? And it even says, let's say, Amram lived 137 years. That was the years of Amram's life. That's what it says in our pasuk that we're talking about here, Vav Chaf, right? So what would that mean according to Shaddai, or according to Jost that Shaddai's quoting? It would mean that people called themselves under the name of Amram for 137 years, right? Until it was broken up into different families, and then that's when his clan died, so to speak. Not, like, died, but okay. So he actually does some fancy math. He says people called themselves by the name of Levi for 137 years after the death of Jacob, and then it was the family of Kohat remained in one group for 133 years, right? This is how many years Levi lived for 137. Then Kohat lived for 133. And then the family of Amram lived for 137, meaning these are all clans, and it has nothing to do with the actual years of their life. How much does that come out to? 133, 137, 137. Quick math. Everybody got it? He says, that's 407, but we're trying to get to 430. So he says, then you have to add the 17 years that they had gone down to Egypt, right? Yaakov and the children had gone down to Egypt. Add those 17 years. So we're at now 424. And that's basically 430. That's basically, you know, rounded to 430. And that's enough.
Much in that we can just ignore 6 years?
Yeah, you know, 430. It's rounded up. You know, the Torah deals in absolute numbers, you know, that kind of thing. Except when it doesn't. And so he says that can actually make sense in terms of the 430 years, is that it was that many years of people calling themselves by the name of that person. All right, that's the Shaddais that we're looking at. Those are fascinating Shaddais. I think very cool. All right, Shkoyach.